I will try to set up the stage so that I can be Father. Can you hear me? I don't want to lecture. Explore that. I'm not the money in my pocket. I am not the car I drive. I'm not my group. This last little inventory, to give you the essence of it, is that I've been getting tired because I've been at this so long that I know hundreds and hundreds of people, and it seems to me they all called me last week. Jesus, haven't you heard me yet? Is what's going through my head. I'm being put upon. I've listened to 4 fist steps in the last 3 weeks, and one of them, he'd already fist stepped with 5 other people. I was just a scalp on his belt, and I'm feeling put upon. Oh! And I found it. This is what my mind will do to spiritual principles. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. For that, I am responsible. Do you know what I have done with that? When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want to be there. I am responsible for their life. Shit. It happens that quick. Of course I'm responsible. I'm responsible on about the 15th call to say, call Jerry, for goodness sakes. So we don't have to waste time with imagery. It's already been fist steps. That was the essence of it. I had become AA again. I'm not AA. I'm just an old drug. Okay? Now I'm back in touch with God. What do you want me to do? Well, we've been doing it. He wants me to go home tonight. You know how I know that? I have a plane ticket. And I tell you the truth, I've been watching. Even if the car breaks down, I can walk to LaGuardia from here and still catch that plane. The sex inventory took me 2.5 years to do it. I couldn't remember anything. When I did it, it was really short. Okay. Really short. Most of my sex life took place here. Most of it. I had 2 children. I was truly stunned that I'd gotten that far. Okay. Somebody knew what to do. I didn't know what to do. I woke up to another reason I was having difficulty with relations with women. I spent my life learning about women from men who don't know anything at all about women. I get along fine with women now because I learned about women from women. I went through 2 marriages because I tried to be a husband and tried to have them be a wife and a mother. And I told you I rescued sick women because it made me feel useful. Well, I've been married to the same woman for 21 years now without a fight because I've learned how to be her husband. I've learned what I know about my wife from my wife. I know what she likes and what she doesn't like. And where I'm constantly exploring. I'm absolutely devoted to her. Being in love with her was not enough to marry her. I had to make a different decision. Our relationship is based on my relationship with God and her relationship with God. And that's the foundation. You see, I don't need her. She doesn't need me. I'm fine when she's not around, and she's fine when I'm not around. But it's better when we're together. Yeah. I'm not rude. See, God comes by invitation only. Never rude. You want to know why God isn't taking care of your problem? Because you haven't let it go yet, that's all. You keep saying, gimme, gimme, gimme. I want it, I want it, I want it. It feels good. I can do something with this. Whatever you're saying. I don't know how to turn it over. That's so esoteric, I can't get it. But I know how to let go. I know how to abandon. I've done that all my life. Yeah. just walk off and leave it. I don't know why in the world God would want my problems anyway. He just doesn't want me to have them. This clears my mind for that. The sex inventory for me today is a conduct inventory. And thank God it is a conduct inventory. It's not a pornography inventory. It's a conduct inventory that I can carry into my relationships at home, in business. I just did an inventory about the business I was or the job I was in, and found out I was not suited for that job, so I went in and resigned. They gave me a better job, one I am suited for, but I was having trouble with the job. They wanted all this paperwork to get done. I didn't care whether it ever got done. I'm not a good administrator. I'm not a bureaucrat. My boss asked me 2 years ago, would you be willing to become a bureaucrat? And I said, oh, I'll try it. And a year and a half later, I had to go to him and say, I don't think this is good for me or you. I'm not a good administrator. I don't give a damn if it ever gets done. I have work to do, real work to do. And all the way through this, my wife says, whatever you need, my dear. I'm going to shut down with an image. You got enough of how I do inventory? You're technical experts anyway. When I think of my relationship with God, I think of one of the finest films I have ever seen called The Princess Bride. Young farm boy and a young girl, and he's absolutely in love with her. And she knows it and takes great advantage of him. She asks him to do things, and his response is always, as you wish. And that's what I found from God. The response is always, as you wish. So it behooves me to stay in a place where I can say, what I wish is what you wish. And you know what he wants from me? I'm told right here. He wants me to be happy, to be joyous, and to be free. He wants me to be the spearhead of his ever-advancing creation. Boy, that's a hummer, isn't it? Right out front where the point is sharp. Bring him on, I'm Zorro. Happy, joyous, and free. He wants me to be kind, with a genuine tolerance for other people and their opinions and attitudes. He wants me to be of genuine service and to be useful. That's what he wants me to be. I don't even have to think about it. It's all written down right here. People tell me, I don't know what God's will is. I do, if this is true. And so I practice that, and sure enough, I'm happy and I'm joyous and I'm free. Not 24 hours a day. I got over the pursuit of happiness, by the way, because of Jerry Lewis. I get my spiritual messages from strange places. I was worried about being happy. Jerry Lewis said, there's no such thing as happiness. You're just going to have to learn to be happy without it. I'm not always joyous. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand feeling as good as I do with my granddaughter 24 hours a day. I couldn't stand it. At a moment of great joy, I can live or I can die, and it won't make the slightest bit of difference. And I think that's why most of us are afraid of joy, because I could go now. Life is finally complete. I can go now. It scares the crap out of us. Don't be afraid of it. Stick around. There's another dose right around the corner. Okay. Well, on and on and on. Jerry?
Hell, I love where he goes, Al. You know, sometimes I think I'm just going to just sit here and listen, too. This deal about sex really is more about the relationship we have with one another. And for those of us who are blessed with having... See, I'm married, and most of you know, to a little sane woman called Gail. And she's... And she and Jackie, by the way, are good friends. My wife, I discovered many years ago, one Friday night when we were dating, and I said to her, I was in Wichita, Kansas, and she lived in Kansas City, and I said to her, what are you going to do this weekend? And she had just got off work, and she what she did was she worked Monday through Friday there in Wichita and drove back to Kansas City for the weekend, and where her home was. And so one Friday night, I really kind of wanted her to stay there in Wichita where I was. And so I said to her, I said, what are you going to do this weekend? She said, well, as soon as I get off work, I've got to head for home. And I said, well, why don't you hang around and maybe we'll do something? And she said, well, no, I need to go to Kansas City. And see, and all my life I had been able to kind of, you know, do a little twisting and turning and whining, and they would eventually do what I needed for them to do. And so I said, well, I really thought we'd do something this weekend. And she said, no, I've got to go to Kansas City. And so she got off work, and she came by, and I noticed that she had her suitcases in the car. I said, where are you going? And she said, I'm going to Kansas City. And I went through some lame little gyration of whining, and I looked at her, and she had started the engine, and she was ready to leave. She just come by to say she was headed for Kansas City. It dawned on me that it wasn't going to make any difference what I did. She really didn't need me. She didn't need my approval. She was going to Kansas City. I thought, this is a neat deal. I was able to see that for the very first time in my life. I thought, this is a neat deal. This woman does not need me. She doesn't care whether I want her to go or not go. She's going to go do what she's going to do. And that was the beginning of one of the most beautiful relationships I have ever had in my life. Now, there's always humor to this, and Don carries us to such lofty spiritual heights that I'm always hesitant to bring you back down to the street, but I'm going to anyway. And I have to use Don and I have to use Jackie to tell this story because they're an integral part of it. See, I went through this sex inventory, and it says many of us needed a thorough overhauling there. And so I thought, my God, if anybody ever needed a thorough overhauling, I do. So that was a part of my prayers. I went into this. And I won't bore you with all the grim details of it. Mine was extremely short also, very, very short. And the bottom line to my sex inventory is, what should we have done instead? You should have left her alone. That's always came down to that. But in any event, about a year later, and this whole thing hadn't fallen into place yet. There was a piece missing. See, when my old mind began to die and my new mind showed up, I couldn't even recognize what the new thinking was. I wasn't sure what it was. And I and Don and I had gone down to a conference in Little Rock, Arkansas. And by the way, is it all right if I tell him that story about the little conference in Conway, Arkansas, and living? He says that's all right. So, hell, I probably would have told it anyway. But we go to this conference, and we've gone back out to the airport in Little Rock, and he says, you know, he says, I've been away from home for 3 days. And I thought, okay, that's nice. He said, you know, he said, Jackie really misses me when I've been gone this long. I thought, oh, that's nice. He said, you know, she's going to be horny when I get home. I thought, where are we going? And then he said, I think I'm going to give her a little. Now, there's humor to that, but there's a spiritual principle involved. That's the first time in my entire life that I had ever heard in terms of giving to the person that you dearly care for. See, I had grown up in locker rooms, as Don talks about, with men, and excuse us, ladies, this sounds crude, you're going to go home and get a little? I'd never heard in terms of go home and give a little. I didn't know that. You talk about a spiritual awakening, but that was a missing piece. That was a missing piece. Now, I have the kind of a... I'm married to such a beautiful woman that it's very easy to make love to her all the time. From the time we wake up in the morning, I start our courtship. And she likes it, by the way. And I don't care where it goes. I'm always in a giving mood, don't get me wrong. But I'm just there as a willing lover and a willing friend, and I let her call the shots. And I tell you what, it's been the basis of being the single best friendship I've ever had, the single best anything I've ever had. And she and I were talking just before I left for this trip, and I said, "How's my soulmate doing today?" And she said, God, I like to hear that. God, I like to hear that. See, we're just going through life together, doing this little thing together. And I'm here to give her anything that I can. Anything that I have that she wants, I'll give it to her, whatever that happens to be. And a big part of that relationship is based on being quiet enough. See, my wife does like to talk. God, she just loves, those of you who know her know that. She loves to talk. And it has become a part of my nature to listen. And so she likes that. And all these things became possible as a result of this little process. For years, people would ask me, "Well, Jerry, why don't you say something?" Hell, I don't have anything to say. You know, all my life, I've tried to be what other people wanted me to be, and I can't be what somebody wants me to be. I am whatever God is in the process of allowing me to become. And part of my process is I have become a fun listener. I get excited. The truth of the matter is, your life is more interesting than mine. My wife's thinking is more interesting than mine. See, I'm the kind of a guy who'll try to take a queen-size box spring mattress down to the bottom of a stairs and turn into a narrow little doorway. That's the way my mind works. She has a great mind because she'll say, "No, why don't you go out and come in through the garage? It's a straight shot." And so I like to listen to her. And that's all about giving her my time. And it really isn't a big deal. It's not noble. It's just great joy in that. Just great joy in that. When I get home tonight, she will have 3 days worth of events that she's going to want to share with me. And I have a job to do when I get home tonight. I may have two jobs. Who knows? I'll do whatever I need to do. Don talked to you earlier one time. He said, "Can we ask God to go where we want to go? Anywhere?" And I heard him say that one time, and I thought, you know, I wonder if that would work in a very intimate setting with sex. I thought, either it will or it won't. Either I'm all the way in this deal or I'm not. Try it. It's a nifty little deal. It really is a nifty little deal. This is about giving of ourselves one to another. Not about ever getting anything ever again. And that's a revolutionary thinking for me. I mean, that really is revolutionary thinking for me. All my old ideas had to be willing to let go of them. I could talk to you about that just on and on and on because it's been such a marvelous experience. My wife allows me to be the goofy guy that I am. And I really am. I'm weird. And she doesn't mind. You know why she doesn't mind? Because that's what she's always saying to me. "You allow me to be who I am." And she said, "I just love that freedom. Just love the freedom to be able to be." See, my wife is somewhat of a, if she'd have had her, she'd have been on stage as a performer. She just loves to sing and dance, and that's her way. She'd have been an actress, singing, dancing actress. And so she has that kind of spontaneity that she's just always bouncing around like a little rubber ball. And with me, she gets to be that way, and she just loves it. Just loves it. Truth of the matter is, I do too. I just love it that way. And that's all a result of this little deal here. I have no expectations of her. None whatsoever. I have a lot of fun and listen to Fifth Steps once in a while because people say, well, I just thought he would, or I just thought she should. And there's that little word just in there. And I recognize that word because anytime I think, well, she should just, and if she doesn't just, then it gets to be, God damn, why didn't she do that? So what I'm sharing with you in the nature of the relationship I get to have with my wife today is a direct result of just following this little spiritual path here. Like I say, technically, you know what? Don's talked to you about that you know how to do this. But in the spirit of it, this is a marvelous little deal, and it is so very, very simple. What should I have done instead? For many, many years, it really was simple as I should have just left them alone. Get spiritually fit, and they'll show up. I'd love to tell you the story of how my wife and I met. I had nothing to do with it. I really didn't. I was being of service for a charity function, and she walked up to me and she said, do you ever go out to dinner? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, I work down here periodically, and when I'm here, I wouldn't mind us going out to dinner if you'd like to. And I thought, that'd be all right. I mean, she's cute. And we've been going out to dinner ever since. That was 1990. She's a grand woman. Like I say, I can talk on and on and on about her and about this whole deal.
I'm going to give you a little technical piece here. Periodically, just because it's so much fun, I get together with folks who have some long-term sobriety, and we sit down for a weekend, and we go through the entire step process. Clint Hodges and I made it in 13 hours one time. It's brutal. Don't do it to new people. But if you've been over this ground a time or two, let me give you a viewpoint of the sex inventory that will save you a whole lot of time and many reams of paper. Okay. It's a conduct inventory. I want to find out what my conduct is because it's separating me from God and from you. Okay. So this time, instead of making a list of people and institutions with principles and then asking where have I been selfish and so on, start with the question, where have I been selfish? And let the list develop itself. Where have I been self-seeking? And let the list develop itself. Where have I been inconsiderate? The list will develop. If you're awake and your mind is open, the list will develop. Am I unjustifiably arousing jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? That's a normal business tactic. It is. Am I participating in that? And where? And the list will develop. Okay. Got it? Real simple. It's surgical. There's no way out. Where was I at fault? And what should I have done instead? Almost anything but what I did. Okay. What should I have done instead is the question that tells me what I'm going to have to go do to clean this up. You really pull it all together if you get truly honest and open to the thing. It is on page 69 and 70 that the whole thing wraps up. This is how I'm to handle any problem in life. That's what it says. It says we treat sex as we would any other problem. So how do I treat any problem? In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The answer will come if we want it. Ah, how wonderful. I'm finally free if I can really do that. I no longer have scripts. Life is a spontaneous thing. Each specific matter, there's no rules here. There's principles. What should I do about each specific matter? Who am I to be here? It tells me in another place that I'm to ask him. I'm to do what I think he would have me do, and then ask for strength. How would he have me handle this situation? Man, life gets fun when you're in a situation where you know you don't have a clue, and you start praying for a flood, and all of a sudden something happens and you're part of it. I'm really a simple person. I don't know if you've got that yet. I didn't even bring a tie with me. I'm a very private person. And that's a fact. I really am a very private person. And while I love to travel, I even love being at home more. I'm not the kind of person that you would normally pick to be involved in world-changing events. But I got to be. I got to go to Russia in 1988 with a very small group of people to talk to the Russians about Alcoholics Anonymous and the possibility that they might open the door enough that it could happen for them, for their alcoholics. That's pretty big stuff. I'm just a little kid. I don't have a clue as to how to behave in a country where they don't even speak anything at all, I understand. That was a foreign country. Their whole attitude was different. I don't have a clue. But I learned to listen, and what I was hearing is that they were saying, because they said it openly, we do not trust you. We do not trust Alcoholics Anonymous. You're Americans. All you want to do is use AA to bring your imperialist ideas into our country. They said that in the front page of the newspaper about us. What the hell are you going to do about that? I'm not a foreign diplomat. I'm just a little kid. And my compatriots, the folks I went with, I loved dearly. One of the things I must tell you about the trip is that on a personal level, the event was so amazing to me because all four of us who went were able to set aside ourselves and be more concerned with the mission than we were our own well-being. It was an amazing thing to watch. All of us did it. And all of us are very self-centered people. Please understand, you don't get into the right place where you make a trip like that without some ego. Okay. I've got one. I kept saying, yeah, I can handle it, yeah, I can handle it, yeah, I can handle it. And now I'm in a spot where I don't even know where I am. And people are indicating to me that the entire possibility of AA being allowed into Russia may lay on my shoulders. Shit, I'm in over my head. Way over my head. So I got out of the way and did all this, removed my fear, direct my attention to what you would have me be. You wanted me to be responsive, that's all. And what I'm trying to tell you, I'm trying to get it set so you understand there's no ego in this, because there really wasn't. A fellow had written a book about AA, a Russian, very pro-AA. And those folks have an interesting thing they do with a book like that. It sold 50,000 copies right away, and then they had a huge public meeting with him and some government officials and hundreds of people, Russians and policemen and court people and all kinds of folks, where they would critique the book so his second edition would be a little better. And we were invited. We're sitting in the front row because we were the dignitaries. They really had ceremony over there. Anyway, pretty soon they ask us to comment. And I'm really aware I'm over my head. I've been listening to them questioning this author. They're going to get me. They're going to eat me alive. Pretty soon they ask us to comment. And I'm really aware I'm over my head. I've been listening to them questioning this author. They're going to get me. They're going to eat me alive. And my compatriots know that I'm willing to stand up and shoot my mouth off and be spontaneous whether I know what I'm talking about or not. Okay. Well, I am. And so someone asked this question. They said, how do you think Alcoholics Anonymous will work in Russia? Now, there's a trick one for you. And I immediately did what this said. Oh, God, how do you want me to handle this one? And I heard it come out of my mouth. I said, I really don't know. I've only been here 13 days. I have no way of knowing. I don't know enough about you. And they applauded it. Because it was the truth. I have no way of knowing. I'm not here to sell you siding. Okay. I don't know. What I do know is that in 144 other languages and other countries and other cultures, it has worked. That I do know. And then I sat down, stunned that I had finally said the right thing. Because I couldn't have thought of that. God, how would you have me handle this one? In every circumstance. And the inventory, of course, keeps me clear. What I got free, locked up for a cell, working on the 8-step. I still have to go back and clear the decks. I don't want to be blindsided by anybody, and if I harmed you, I owe you. If I harmed you, I owe you. There is no slack in the way I have been taught to do amends. If others are going to be involved, I need to consult them, however. When I came out of the penitentiary, I had a 5-year federal parole and what the hell did they give me? 3-year state parole still to do. So I was on paper, and that means you don't leave the state. In fact, you don't hardly leave anything without contacting somebody. And my memories began to come back, and I remembered that before my last arrest in Cheyenne, Wyoming, at the Rexall drugstore, I had cashed a bad check to buy amphetamines with a prescription that I had also written myself. We're looking at another 7 years. No question about it. And because you all taught me there is no slack here, I had to do something about it. Now that I'm aware of it, I've got to do something. But other people would be involved in this. I'm getting my life back in order. I got 2 parole officers who are going to have to make a decision. If I go to Wyoming and get busted, they got decisions to make. So I talked to my sponsor, and we decided the best thing to do, first of all, is go talk to the parole officer and admit to him what had happened and what I had to do about it. That's a little spooky to go into your parole officer and say, by the way, I'm about to go do 7 years in Wyoming. Okay. He said, look, I truly understand. And they got a hold of the state parole officer who had turned me over to him anyway, and they decided, if you decide to go, we will not violate you for leaving the state, and if they arrest you, we won't violate you for that. Get done what you need to get done. Well, now I'm really eager. My sword is all the way out, and I'm ready to charge. And thank God for wiser heads. My sponsor said, now, wait a minute. You also have a number of other things going on right now. It would be silly for you to just dash in there and be heroic and go through this. You're visiting your kids now. You've got a job. There's a number of people going to be affected. He said, I know the guy. I grew up in Cheyenne. Let's write him a letter first and ask him how he wants you to handle this. You get clean with him and ask him how he wants you to handle it. It's a form of prayer, you know. How would you have me handle this one? We wrote to him, and I wish I could give you a really high drama wrap to the story, but there isn't one because he was dead and the store was closed and it was over. And we talked seriously about, don't I still owe Wyoming something? And I was told by a number of people that I trust, no, you cheated him, not Wyoming. If he wanted to put you in prison, you would have to go. But the state can't do anything about it anyway. They can't bring the charges. It's over. Just be done with it. And the importance of it was that I truly was willing to go back into the Wyoming State Penitentiary if that's what it took. And the mercy of it was clear that that isn't where God wants me. I had a terrible time when I came out. They told me, my sponsor told me just before I was paroled, he said, I wish they weren't even considering letting you go. You're not ready. And he was right. So I went back and spent that next week getting ready. I went back through the steps again and got ready so that when I hit the street, I could say to God, how would you have me handle this one? I don't know how to live out here. Okay. But we didn't think I was going to hit the street because I still owed the feds 5 years. We honestly thought I was going back to Latuna, Texas, to the federal prison down there and finish my time down there. So I prepared myself to be a good little prisoner and carry God's message into the federal penitentiary. Not too much ego. Well, apparently he's got guys down there doing that because they put me back on the street. But it was hard for me to make the adjustment that day. I was ready to go to the penitentiary. I was not ready to hit the street. Parole officer said to me, when I reported into him, he said, have a job by tomorrow, or back you go. Goodbye. That's at 11 o'clock. Just a little after 11:30, I had a job. When people make it really clear to you what you have to do, you just go do it. But I got the job because I had to walk. The state I was in was interesting. I really wasn't ready. I went to get on a bus to go out job hunting, and it had a sign on the front of the bus that said, have exact fare, drivers carry no change. And I could not get on the bus. I was too afraid that they might ask me to get off because I didn't have the right change. And I could not do that. And, of course, that turned into a blessing because I went down to another place. Some guy in the jail had given me a slip of paper with a name on it. Daily labor pool was all it was. And you taught me to be completely out front. So I walked in and I said, are you Jack? He said, I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic. I just got out of the penitentiary, and I'm on parole, state and federal parole, and I need work. What do you got? And he said, you're exactly who I've been looking for. He got all excited. Took me over to a place that doesn't hire ex-cons. But that's okay. I'm not an ex-con. And they put me to work on the daily labor pool, and somewhere along the way, they hired me to work on the dock. And I've been taught to be completely open. God will use whatever is in my life to his advantage. I need hide nothing. And on the application, I put the kind of work I'd been doing. I was a drug smuggler. I was a burglar. What do you got? These are the only skills I've got, man, from 1967 back. This is what I did for a living. And it's all on there, and they hired me anyway. And I'm working on the dock and working hard. I did learn to work. And one day the dispatcher called me in, and he's got a funny look on his face, and my application in his hand. He said, did you really do that? And he's talking about the drug deal where I brought the drugs over from old Mexico. I said, yeah, I did that. And he said, I've been thinking about that. The kind of skills and logistical talent that it takes to move dangerous stuff from one place to another seems to be something you do pretty good. And I got this little truck that services the print shops in downtown Denver, and I need somebody who can get stuff from here to there in a timely manner. Would you like the job? In God's hands, he uses whatever's at hand. You need to be afraid of nothing. He'll use it so that you can be of service to him. See, I can look you right in the eye and tell you there is absolutely nothing that you can't do with your life if you'll put it in God's hands. I work in corrections. I've got 84 inmates that I have to look in the eye every day and say, quit whining. Don't tell me that you can't ever do anything again because you got a record. I'm a three-time loser, and I've got the keys to the place. So get off it. Okay? Yeah. And that's what he wants of us, to be able to do that for people, particularly alcoholics who don't believe that they have a chance. You got to look them in the eye and say, don't give me that. I'm one of them. Listen to me. Here I am. And I don't drink anymore. That's all we're asked to do. I believe, and this is just my viewpoint, the 10th and 11th and 12th step are simply the first nine over and over again. Okay? With some new stuff added. Now that I'm awake spiritually, what do I do with that? I know that I'm supposed to grow spiritually by helping other people. And through genuine sacrifice. This weekend is a sacrifice. I used to pretend it was no sacrifice for me. I love it. And I do love it. I mean, look at this. I got to fly into New York on your money. Okay. I got attention all weekend, whether I wanted it or not. I got to see something nobody in my town that I know has ever seen. I got to watch them play bocce. Man, I'm going home and get some bocce balls. That looked like fun. But there's a sacrifice, because there's a whole part of me who would rather be home this weekend. My wife makes a sacrifice every time I come out here. She loves you more than I do. See, I need you. I will come out of my own need. She doesn't need you. She just loves you. This weekend was particularly difficult for her, and I know it was. Friday, she had two medical procedures to go through. She's the head nurse on an infant research unit at Children's Hospital, and she's short-staffed. So in addition to those two little procedures she had, little, shit, they hurt. I just went through one of them. She had to work a night shift, and today she's working a day shift and a night shift. She'd really wish I were there for all that, but she loves you and knows the importance of what we're going to do. And that's what sacrifice is. It isn't giving up with this, oh my. It's an offering up of all of me and all of my resources for God's use. That's all it is, an offering up. Okay. And because we do that, we get some really fun weekends. We got to go to see the Mask of Zorro together. And she really enjoyed it. And so did I. And she came to understand clearly that that's me. I'm him. Oh, yeah. So don't be afraid of sacrifice and don't feel noble about it. You're by God lucky to be alive and in your right mind. And if it takes a little sacrifice to pass that on, the benefits are beyond belief. To practice the principles in all of my affairs, and it tells me that here, is the most important thing of all. My sobriety is not the most important thing for me. It has to be the most important, but it's not the most important. A demonstration of these principles in our homes and our communities is far more important than a demonstration of our principles in this meeting. This is nice, but I got to take this to the street. Okay? I don't get to stand up in my neighborhood and say, I'm Don and an alcoholic, and I've been sick. Be patient with me. I got to cut my lawn and trim my hedges and put the trash out on the right day so the dogs don't get it. My boss expects me to show up at work on his terms, not mine. Although I'm in a funny position. I just resigned, and they gave me a new one where I get to pick the hours I work. That's a burden, because I know what the, I'm working harder than I ever did. In order to practice the principles in all of my affairs, I must have some. Yeah. I don't get to hide out here in this nice, safe little environment. I gotta have some affairs. I have to be careful not to have more affairs than I have principles. Okay. And the basic principle we just read, dear God, how would you have me in this situation? Direct my attention to who you'd have me be. How do you want me to handle this? What's my contribution here? We all have one to make. Sometimes my contribution is to talk, sometimes to listen. God, keep me from telling everybody about how neat I am, but please let me tell people how neat you are through me. I almost died in North Carolina. That 2 years is something. There's a whole book in that I'm not going to write. But I came through a bunch of stuff, finally became a member of the group, began to sponsor people, had a workshop going, the fellowship I craved was being created around me, my prayer life was good, my job life was good, my wife was visiting and I was coming home regularly and I was dying spiritually and I knew it. And I was absolutely baffled because I looked at my life and everything was the way it ought to be. And I'm dying spiritually. And I heard myself say to one of the guys that I work with, I truly don't understand this. I've become a good demonstration for God. What's wrong? And I heard what I said, and that was the problem. I have become a good demonstration for God, and that's not what this is about. It's about letting God demonstrate through me what He can do, not me demonstrating for Him what I can do. I got that attitude changed, and I've been all right since. Constant practice. And the practice becomes fun. I got to stop because if I say one more word, we're headed some places. And we only got about 10 minutes left. I cannot thank you enough. I did not want to come Friday. I was tired. I put in some 11-hour days this week. And nobody appreciated it. (laughs) 387 people called me during the week or so it seemed. And not one of them had a real problem. I ate too much a while back. And ate some ice cream I shouldn't have. And so my liver acted up. I was a pitiful mess, Friday. And I did not want to come. And I'm really glad I did. You have renewed me. You've been very, very kind. I don't understand why you stuck around. It just seems to me that this must be horribly boring after a while. But for whatever reason you stayed, thank you, because I do need to tell you how very much I love my God. How very pleased I am when you allow God to show up through you, because that's why we're here. And so you've renewed me, and my wife's going to enjoy it when I do get home. So I'm going to tell her all about you. I'm going to show her those watchtowers, and she is going to cackle. Because I'm going to get on my old brown suit and tell her, I got work to do, honey. See what they gave me. I've got to go. I'm on the way to Colfax and Broadway.
Tell you what I'll do. I'll get my camera out. And I'll make sure you all have big blow-up pictures of Don down at Colfax and Broadway, the brown suit, and the watchtowers. I really can't add a lot to that, but I just want to say a couple of things. We have alcoholics who come into here, and they still die. And so we do have work to do. We really do have work to do. And it's to take and have our little experience here, if we've tried this, and guide someone else through this same little deal so that we can become useful, wherever we are. I want to share one little very brief story about how important it is that we practice these principles in all our affairs. A few years ago, I had someone here from New York. I had forgotten that people from New York, New York City specifically, are born skeptics. I didn't know that. Or if I ever knew it, I'd forgotten it. But I had a young woman call me one day, and she said, "Jerry, I need to go through this process. Can I come to your house and do it?" And I said, "Well, let's check with Gail and see how she feels about that." And Gail, of course, being who she is, said, "You bet. Come head on." So this young woman showed up and stayed for 3 days, and during that time I gave her the most lofty approach to this book that I could possibly do. And I gave this stuff to her in depth. I gave her all the little pearls that I had uncovered on my own, and some that my sponsor had shared with me, and many that I'd heard in the 20 years I'd been here. And after 2.5 days, I said, "You know, we've been at this for a couple of 2.5 days now. I've got some things I need to go do, some errands I need to go run. You can either stay here or you can go with me, whichever you want to do." I just had to run to the grocery store, and I had to run to the hardware store and a couple of other places and what have you. She said, "Well," she said, "I think it'd be nice to get out." So we jumped in my old truck, and we went and ran these errands, and she went with me into each of the stores. And we got home, and she said, "Excuse me for a little bit. I want to talk to Gail." And so she went and talked to Gail, and I didn't know what they were talking about. Anyway, we finished up going through the process, and she left that afternoon, late that afternoon, and my wife said, "You know, there's some funny stuff goes on here." And I said, "What's that?" She said she didn't want to talk about all the things you had shared with her going through the books. What she really wanted to talk about was she was watching as you went and saw these people in the grocery store and the hardware store and running all these errands. And she drew a conclusion that what you say you're doing when you're going through the book is also what you're doing when you're out there on the street. And that was what impressed her. It impressed her as to what do we do when we're out there, not what we do when we're in here. I, too, am just delighted that you let us come. There's no way to go from where I was 21 years ago to here with the kind of spirit that you all exude. There is a tremendously strong and pure spirit in this little group, and I just can't thank you enough for sharing that with us and bringing us out here and letting us experience it with you. Marvelous, marvelous deal. And I don't want to ruin that by saying anything more. I'll just stop with this. I love you dearly. I love you dearly. You don't have to have any self-love. I love you enough for all you'll ever need. Thanks a bunch.
You can do it fine.